and welcome to Unidentified Wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them in the hobby. This week I've got the best looking Trentinelli, Anthony Trentinelli. How are you going?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm going very well. It's not as hot today, which is nice.
Oh yeah.
That's nice and cool. How's your week been treating you?
It's been a long week, but we are into Friday, so I'm feeling good.
Nice. You got a busy weekend ahead?
Not a thing, which is going to be great.
No tournaments this weekend?
Nah, I told the wife that I would go a little bit slower on tournaments this year. So I'm still hitting the same number of GTs, but we're putting off the RTTs, the one-dayers.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, because I suppose there's probably a lot of one-days sort of around you in general with being close to like a few metropolitan areas as well.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, they're definitely day-long affairs, but they're definitely things I can also put off to save for the bigger tournaments.
Yep, fair enough. No worries. Have you been much to like hobby or army building or like that the last week or so?
Yeah, you know, I just finished. So at the end of last year, I was getting into the Gits before the new book came out. I was super excited about it. Loved all the squigs. Still do. But I just finished up my Gits project just in time to put them away because I refused to play that new book.
You haven't earned the stripes.
And I did. I love this. I had this like self-flagellation that I have to play with bad stuff.
Okay.
So I'm just switching over. Actually going to start up a Soul Blight project.
Ooh, what type of Soul Blight are you taking?
I am looking to do a Vampire Coast theme. So
okay.
Just pulled up a bunch of Black Ark Corsairs. Going to make some Grave Guard. Try to convert up some of the units from the game into units that I can use on the board.
That'd be very cool. They've got such a unique aesthetic, those like pirate vampires with their big war machines with the big long legs and everything else.
Oh yeah,
the names of them,
it's so exciting. Yeah, like, and they transfer over too, like those the Colossus there, they could definitely be like a mercenary giant. The rotting Leviathan there could be a Mortark pretty easily. Lots of options, you know, Depth Guard is Grave Guard. Oh, it's easy. Writes itself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you like spend a lot of time converting and like adjusting your armies normally?
You know, yeah, I would say that I value the hobby aspect of this game as much as the gaming side of it. Actually last year I took a break from the hobbying side of it so much as I powered through so many armies, getting them painted and playing them. And I didn't get to spend a lot of time to lovingly convert all the stuff. So I'm doing the opposite approach this year. Going to do maybe one army and make it look really sweet.
And go for that sort of like the best hobby prize. Is that the ultimate goal?
You know, I'm used to getting it. And last year I didn't because I kind of had to power through a lot of armies pretty quickly. And not going to lie, it bothered me a little bit that I was putting stuff on the table that didn't look as good as I'm used to saying. So I'm looking to get back and getting more onto that side of things this year.
I can never understand that feeling. I took Bone Splitters to a team's tournament and I had to sort of speed paint them all. And I'm like, oh, I feel like saying every time I play a tournament game with them, oh, I haven't really finished painting them yet because I'm not happy with the overall like level that I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like, it just feels bad on your own end of being like, it's not a happy army to play with because it's not up to the standard that you want it to be at.
Yeah, like you got to apologize. I'm like, I promise you, I'm better than this. I can do better. And because of I felt that way, and I'm terrible at going back to models. I sold all of those armies. Every single one that I did last year, I sold them all so I can kind of start fresh and go from a clean slate.
Mm-hmm. So you're not Ridge, because Ridge was saying, oh, I went back to some models and cleaned them up and adjusted them all.
He's a madman. Yeah. I hate that.
I think he's the first person I've ever heard said that go back to a model.
Yeah, no, nobody does that. I definitely don't do that.
Is that a normal thing for you to sort of buy and sell armies then? Or is this just unique to last year?
It's always been the case. I've got plenty of space at the house, right? I could keep every army I've built. But I have like only so much mental capacity for armies, and this like nagging feeling in my head comes in. It's like, man, you've got six armies. You can only play one at a time. You're only going to be really playing three max. So you gotta get rid of some of the waste.
You don't sit there and admire your models you painted up then from your previous armies?
So yes, I do, but like I said, I kind of blasted through all those armies last year, so there's nothing there. I kept Sigvald from my Slaanesh army, and I've got a Dexessa that I've been looking forward to paint. I think we're going to use those for paint competitions. Use those for paint competition pieces. And then the armies that I kept, Gitz and Slaves to Darkness, are ones that I put the time into paint and do well. So those ones do get to stay in the shelf and they'll stick around.
Do you plan on pulling out your Gitz once we get the big nerf? Or are the book t still too strong then?
You know, probably. I played him a lot at the end of last year. I kind of threw a bunch of tournaments all at the very tail end from like November to January. And I got a little overwhelmed with how many that was, with a rough book. So I'm okay giving them a little bit of a break and, letting people play the good stuff and letting people try to build the counter that list and not stuff that I'm bringing instead.
Do you lean heavily with your Gitz as were you like the fun fandical squig side, or were you the more like serious goblins and trolls side?
Oh no. It was my list during that time was all squigs.
Oh,
I
beautiful.
was
Man of my own heart.
yeah, just 72 herd. And just go sit in the middle of the board and back when you had whatever they're the conquerors and they could each count as three. It was actually much better list than people were giving it credit for.
Especially on two wound models that just you didn't pay for an armor save, so they're very
And
point
you
efficient.
could rally them and like it was kind of a brutal army, to be honest with you. I took it to two GTs and went 4-1 at both. And both
That's
games that I
solid.
lost, I had it. I was in the game to win it. So and then I won the two 1-dayers that I brought it to, and I felt good in all of them. It was a much, like I said, much better list than I think people gave it credit for. And then when Grincrack came out, it made it super good. Like that, I was very close to taking it to LVO because I think that list could have done very well.
It's nice to hear sort of people getting the results out of the army that they wanted, because I know we struggled for a while. I think the Expert Conquerors changed a lot, and then the four up rally changed a lot as well. Because I know probably when the book first came out, it was not the best overall. So it's nice to see people getting results out of that same book, what, 2.5, 3 years later.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I spent all last year playing just the terrible armies, and you can get the results with them, but just this other weekend I took Slaves to Darkness and I'm like, man, this game's a lot easier when you take a good army.
How surprising.
Weird how that works.
Do you have a goal when you go to a tournament then? Is it like you want to take the shit army to prove a point, or what's your main premise there for wanting to take a underpowered army?
I don't know. I think that kind of comes into it. Like to be able to say, like, not only did I win, but I beat you with this army that has a 40% win rate. But I don't know. I think that was a bit of the hipster coming out of me. Just
The New
being able to
York
like
hipster.
put it on the table and be like, I'm gonna beat you with this trash. And it was fun. It was fun while it lasted, but it gets a little tiring doing it for a long stretch of time. And I don't know, like I said, I got overwhelmed with how many different armies I was playing and trying to bounce around and be hipster, be anti-meta, be all these
Be the
cool guy
snowflake that
stuff.
you
And I was,
are.
yeah. And I'm just like, you know what? Nah, I'm gonna play the factions that I like and just kind of stick with them, not worry about trying to do too much. And luckily, my factions now are like what I would call my factions, slaves, gets, and getting into Soul Blight. Like, oh, they're good. It can be much easier.
They've got lots of cool tricks, but they're besides maybe the Gitz, there's nothing that's too like not NPE, but two, like it's just straight out broken. There's just a bunch of cool little tech around a bunch of things you can sort of get running and get the ball moving.
Yeah. That's always a concern, right? You get on the table and you're like, if you beat somebody, you don't want them to think like, oh, you beat me because your army's better.
Mm.
You know, you want to be able to go and be like, you know, I won the game because I outplayed you. But I mean, really, it's such a dumb thing to think about, and why I'm moving away, because I'm like, really, there's so many things. Like, I won several of the games. Like, I rolled a 6 on priority on the turn I had to, and that just did it. You know,
my skill at rolling 6s is incredible.
Yeah, we want it to be a skill expression, and there definitely is, or we wouldn't have the same people winning multiple things. But at the end of the day, it's a game for fun. It's a hobby, and there's a lot of self. A lot of masturbation about that. Like, I look at this. I did this with this, and I'm guilty of it too. But I'm trying to get away from that.
Especially when there's large streams talking about who won what tournament, you can always check out and see who's trying to make comments about it, and then you can hear your own name mentioned. It's always nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun. It's you know, I don't want to take that from. I don't want anybody to take that. Like, I love that. I do enjoy hearing my name. Like, oh, so-and-so won this tournament. I'm like, yeah, he did. But, yeah, that's not the main point to it anymore.
How long have you been involved in the tournament scene then?
I started going, my brother and I started going, it was right before COVID hit. We hit our first Nova that year. So it must've been 2019, which now I'm realizing is feels like forever ago.
I know. That was roughly the same time that I got into the tournament scene as well. So it feels like it's like 10 years ago, but it was only, just under 4.
Yeah.
Over 4.
And a lot of that time, nobody got to play anyway. Just sent on TTS and people were grinding there.
What was the catalyst for you to get into a tournament scene with your brother?
You know, so we got into this game. We must have been, I don't know, I'm older than him. I think I was 11, maybe. We had a friend who introduced us. His brother was much older than him and brought us into this 40K side. And we had been playing forever, playing in the basement, making up our own rules. Parents would tell us to go outside. We just set up essentially a table in the driveway. Like, we'd be like 15 feet away from each other trying to, we had these rules. It's like, basically, if you could convince the other person that that's the case, that was what we played. So cool. like guns had however many shots, they had a number of shots equal to the number of barrels on the gun. And like artillery just had infinite range and all this fun stuff. And, you know, it was just to have fun. And we kept doing it. We kind of got away from it a little bit, had a few friends in high school that got into it again. But it wasn't until college that we started looking at like just one day tournaments. Like, let's go do this. It's fun to go play and play somebody besides each other. Kind of had fun there. And from that, we went to, we have a I guess, quote unquote local GT that we went to playing 40K for the first time. And we were excited for it because it was the idea was like a big tournament. We get to participate in this thing. And we didn't really go in with any expectations, but we went in and it was okay. But what we did find was that the across the hall, the Sigmar side was like having a ton of fun. And we're sitting there and we're like, my last game, I got taken off the board before I got to have a turn.
That's frustrating.
Oh, it was awful. This was like the 1-3 bracket. so like we're not even anywhere close to the top. And we're sitting there, we're like at the finale there doing awards. And we're just kind of talking to each other. We're like, did you have fun? And we're like, he's like, I was okay. I'm like, yeah, I kind of felt the same. But then you hear the hooting and hollering across the way. And we're like, those guys look like they're having fun. And so we had already dabbled a little bit in the idea of Sigmar, and that kind of was the catalyst to say, let's go play that game instead. And that was actually legitimately my last game of 40K was that tournament.
Oh, wow.
And I just sold everything and flipped over.
Are you a person that enjoyed the sci-fi side of it all, or do you enjoy the fantasy more now?
That's a good question. At the time, I enjoyed the sci-fi side more. But as I've matured, I've definitely become a bigger appreciator for the fantasy side of things. Just more fun, more space to do your own stuff. And there's still parts of 40K that I like the particular parts of, but I think I much more enjoy the fantasy side.
As someone that's like made a recent change to the other side, the good side, what
For
do
the
you
good guys.
think? Yeah, what do you think the difference is between it? Is it the community itself that leads to having the fun time, or you think maybe the game also leans into that more? What do you think is like the biggest thing between the two sides of the Warhammer coin?
Yeah, I don't know. We were kind of talking about this the other day in one of the Discord chats, and my basic guess, and I'm probably wrong, but my basic guess is because 40K is so supported, it's got a lot of direction given to it by Games Workshop. It's got a lot of direction given to it by these names that have been established, and have been doing it for so long. And Sigmar doesn't really have that yet. There's a few people and a few groups that are starting to establish, a bit of an influence in the scene. But for the most part, we get to, as a whole community, decide how this game is going to go and what the overall feeling of the game is going to be. And I think that because we have the control over that, we get to push it in more of a direction that we want to see. We want to see, we can be competitive. We can be there to win the game, but like at the end of the day, we can push the agenda that first and foremost, we're here to have fun and meet with friends and have a good time.
Because I think this is the same sentiment from most people that I've heard overall, because I know there's a decent 40K scene here, and a lot of people will go to it and go like, oh, I didn't have fun, or the tournament's not really enjoyable. And I've never heard anyone say anything like that from the Age of Sigmar side. Some people won't have an enjoyable tournament because they didn't meet expectations for themselves, but I've never heard anyone in the games overall just have a bad experience on the AOS
Yeah.
side.
And I mean, like, really, because it's smaller, the notoriety for winning isn't as big of a deal. There's no money involved in it, right? So, like, the people that are coming to it on the AOS side, like, there's no real reason to go except to play the game and enjoy yourself. I mean, it's not, it's too unbalanced of a game for somebody who's into like the most highest level of competition and fairness to be looking for it to prove their worth.
You've got that scary double turn in there.
And that's not fair. That's not even. Plus, I mean, again, if somebody's coming in and acting like a prick, you'll probably get told off by the AOS guys. They're for the most part not afraid to say like, hey, watch yourself.
Yeah, you'll get forced out very quickly.
Yeah, and which is, I think it's a good thing, man. I'd hate if we start, relaxing on that and start letting things get taken too seriously, and like the concept of like cash prizes or anything like that would be, I think, detrimental.
I think that's where that ultra competitiveness and the cheating come in as well, because you're now playing for cash money. Like you see it in other sports. As soon as there's something big on the line, people are willing to do anything to win that. I think that's a big reason why. But we've got the golden ticket now, but I don't think that is this exact same thing, because you've also got to have, because the reward is for best overall, isn't it? Not just best general.
I think so, but I also think that it's up to the tournament itself to decide what it's going towards. I know some tournaments get two, like Nova is big enough that it'll get two, I believe. And that would have one for best overall and one for best general. But like, yeah, I mean, just even the fact that overall is a thing, right? Like, you
Yeah.
got to be able to paint and you got to be able to not be a dickhead at the table, to even be eligible for it. And to be honest with you, again, like, that's cool. It's exciting that you get to be involved with something like that. But at the end of the day, like, it's not a huge reward. Like, it's the chance to, it's an opportunity to participate in something. But like, Yeah, you're not making life-changing money. You're not really getting any kind of huge notoriety for it, you know.
I don't
You
even know who
know,
won, or the last year's one, or whatever the
I have no
last one
idea.
was.
No idea. No idea.
Yeah.
I didn't even go. I
Oh,
had a ticket and I didn't go.
that shows how much of a investment people have in
You know,
it.
I just, it was the same tournament, or it was the same weekend as the tournament in the first one I went to. And it's the same tournament that, you know, we as a club first kind of all got together. All my friends are up there. It's my birthday weekend. Like there's so many things going for this other tournament that I'd rather go to.
So that was the same weekend as Nova, was it?
No, it was the tournament that I went to was Du Bois.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Yeah. So the we get the Canadians to come down from Toronto, and we get the guys from DC to drive up, and we get the guys from the New York City area to drive up, and you know, we all meet, and it's kind of a killer tournament in the sense of like the level of participants that come, the level of skill that comes, but it's such a good time. We have a great time, and it's got all my people, you know.
Is it the name? Is it like Du Bois, as in like all Du Bois are coming? Is that what it's from, or is it because of the area it's in?
It's from, I don't know. It's a super old tournament. It's
Okay.
been running for a while. I they're actually kind of making it a thing now where it's a lot of the tournaments in upstate New York are kind of running off of the same pack that they've created there, and I think it's just a holdover from like to their fantasy days because they do 40K there too.
I think that's the main difference that I've noticed. I'm not sure what it's like in the UK because I don't see, like, I see a lot of this, but I don't hear about the other side. In Australia, we don't ever really have a mixed tournament. It's either just a straight 40K tournament or a straight AOS tournament, besides Big CanCon. So to hear that both, like, a tournament is running two different game systems at once is a bit different for us. How do
Really?
you guys find that as a an experience? Is like do they like merge at the end, or what's how does like a tournament with two different game systems go?
You know, a lot of the times, I'm trying to think because actually, most of them that I'm thinking about, minus the smaller ones, like the 30 person ones, they almost are always combined.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I think it's just to, you know, be able to get numbers, you can rent a bigger space if you got more people. And it's different. Like some of them are big enough that, you know, so the US Open ones and the Nova are big enough that they're in different rooms. So you don't even see them. There's no overlap whatsoever. Minus for in some cases the awards are together. But other ones like Du Bois, it's just one side of the hall is 40K and the other side is AOS, and we get to have a really good time, especially at the ceremonies, trying to make sure that they know we had a better time. The most
Oh,
important part of that tournament is to make sure at the end they know we had a
yes.
better time than they did.
Yep, I've heard all about LVO, how it was you guys had to lift the room up quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, I think it works because a lot of the AOS crowd feels that way. You know, we share this thought like we're here to have a good time, and you like we're going to show we're having a good time. There's some people that don't like it, but well, fuck them. if they don't like it, then that's fine. We're going to do it anyway. And there's a lot of people that do feed into it, and that's who we're here for.
You get that energy rolling, and then everyone around you sort of just gets sucked into it all.
Yeah, either they feed into it and they help contribute, or they stand off on the side and enjoy it, or they leave. And either way, everybody that's left is having a good time.
I think that's the whole point of a tournament, is to have a good time. So if you're being negative about things, I don't think you're there for the right investments for yourself.
Yeah, that's I feel the same.
So you've been talking about tournaments quite often. What is your main premise for a tournament? Is it just there for social wise? Do you have an ultimate goal? Because I know you said you enjoy taking the weaker armies. Is it a goal to like sort of get like a 4-1 or a 5-0? Or what's your overall thing with the tournament at the moment?
So through last year, I was actually honestly, I was disappointed if I didn't go 4-1 or better. I I do like to win. I mean, who doesn't like to win? Yeah. I'm going to quote Shorzy here. It's not even that I like to win. I hate losing. Okay. but that being said, it's all about the social factor for me. At this point, I've met so many cool people that I want to go to these tournaments and hang out, and I want to win, but more importantly, I want to go and hang out with these people and just have a good time. Especially with how big our country is and how widespread a lot of the people that I've gotten to meet are, tournaments are the only time I get to see them. So I want to go, I want to see everybody. There's times I get there, man, I don't even want to play Warhammer. Like, can we, you know what, instead of going to this like hot, sweaty hall and yet sit there moving around toy soldiers for a few hours, let's just hang out here. Let's we'll play Pong or we'll go swimming or something and just chill.
When I was speaking to Gabe, a fellow Tough Crowd member, well, I think he is now, I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
we were both saying if we went over to a US tournament, we probably wouldn't even play. We would just hang out and talk to everyone.
It's yeah.
You get so locked into the game, you're only meeting those five or six opponents, and then like you're half wrecked. So yeah. Then you've got to try and get the energy to party on afterwards. Whereas I feel like if you could spend the whole 2 or 3 days just talking and meeting with everyone.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I took Slaanesh to Summer Slaughter last year. It was 110 people or something like that. And we had our whole crowd there. We had a killer Airbnb, and we had some guys come over from England and hang out. It's first time meeting a couple of them. And it's just like, I don't want to play. I don't want to play this game, man. I just want to hang out at the Airbnb and do fun shit. But on top of that, because I was playing Slaanesh in a new GHB, I've never been more just wrecked, like trying to remember all my stuff and do all these, this and that and the other. I'm like, man, that's why this year I'm like, I'm taking good armies. If I can table you in like 45 minutes, we can get a beer and go harass the other people playing their games and wander and chill.
Especially, I suppose, on game 4 and 5, when you've had 3 games the previous day of having to flex that big muscle, and then you've been drinking and hanging out, and then you've got to do it all over again for the Sunday. Mm-hmm. Your brain's just like, I don't have the capacity to do this anymore.
No, and it's because you only ever see these guys. Like, we're sitting there, and I think like Saturday night at that Airbnb, we played ping pong till like 3 a.m. So we're not well rested. I was in a very rough shape the next day, but we had a really good time.
Have you been enjoying taking these underpowered armies, or do you find you put too much stress on yourself?
Both. I put more stress on myself than any person in their right mind should. And I will be one of the first people to tell you not to put that stress on yourself, but I don't listen to that advice. I just honestly, at this point, I accept it. I just know that that's part of me. I've always been very competitive in pretty much everything I do, like since I was a kid. Like, even if it's not a competition, I'll mentally make it a competition.
Just by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm aware of that. And playing the bad factions on top of it, I don't know. I'm just dumb, I guess. I'm not sure. I don't know why I got in my head that I needed to do that. Like I said, I've kind of backtracked on that a bit and reverted back to the armies that I like, the aesthetics that I like, the ones that I enjoy painting and playing. You know, I was excited to go back to Slaves to Darkness, not because of the new book necessarily, because I really enjoyed playing Knights of the Empty Throne in the old book, but because that was the army that was the first one that really clicked for me. Lore wise, aesthetic wise, and playstyle wise, that I was able to take to tournaments and feel really, really good about. So I was really excited to go back to them. They're the one that I held on to instead of selling like every other one. Gitz, I had bought that whole army 3 times before. Oh, wow. Three times, twice sold it. I finally built and painted it, and I feel really good about having it now. There's still a bit of that, like, I like to be unique, which is why I'm having a hard time with the concept of actually playing it right now. The slaves representative is bad enough. It's too popular for me. I don't like being on the list of like the most popular factions at the tournament. I hate that, but at some point you have to kind of set aside some of your expectations and just run the stuff you like.
You've got to melt your own snowflake and join in with the rest of the water.
Yeah, at some point they'll be bad again and nobody will play it, and then I get to feel
Yep.
special.
So you were saying you enjoyed like their play style. How were you playing the old slaves, and how are you playing the new slaves that you enjoy so much?
So every army I end up with ends up being cavalry.
Okay.
That's my thing. And previously it was Knights of the Empty Throne. I loved the I hate hard control. Like as a at some point there's too much control. A little bit of control is good and I think healthy and it's fun to use, but too much is bad for the game. And I feel like the old Knights of the Empty Throne was like an aggressive control army that if you didn't play it, it felt good because if you played it well, it was very hard to beat. But if you played it poorly, it just melted. So it ticked all those boxes for me, right? And I could have some knights off on the side doing their own little thing. And I felt like I had like a cool cavalry-based army. And now I'm doing the same exact thing. Just how many knights, how many Varangard can I jam into a list? And, I got a buff in my damage. I don't have as much control, but that Nurgle mark with the banner on a unit of 10 knights is just
It's disgusting.
disgusting. Yeah, exactly. It's so tough to deal with. Sometimes I feel a little bad, but then I'm like, yeah, it's fine. just and I get to do the same thing. I get to play that same models that I was playing before. I get to play like they're fast, they hit hard, they're also tanky, like they hit all the boxes. And I don't have to play 400 models.
I have the perfect army for you. There's
Yeah, it's
such thing
great.
called spiders. They're
Yeah,
cavalry based, and
you
they're
got it.
gits, and no one's playing them.
I have a list built, and I mean, I didn't make it, I stole it, but it's like, yeah, at this point with the points hikes, it's like nine big spiders. You can't even put it on the board in
Wow.
some battle plans, but
Yeah,
man, it'd
that's
be
crazy.
cool.
So, what you saying with your play style that you enjoyed the aggressive control? Are you quite an aggressive player?
I like to pretend that I am. I like to like line up on the line, but running units that I know you're not going to kill. Like line up like I'm going to take first turn and then just give it away every time. I almost never take it.
There's a little tip. If you listen to the podcast,
Yeah.
Anthony doesn't take the first turn. He might
Un
look like it,
un
but he's not going to.
unless if but if you leave me an opening, I'm taking it. And I will run down your throat. The so many people I think fall into the trap of even with like the Blood Tooth Iron Jaws when that was a thing. Like people wanted to, fasten double or fight fasten mighty destroyers all the way up the board with two big blocks and a maw crusher and try to just alpha people off in one turn. And some people did it to great success, but the people that were really doing well with that book were not doing it trying to table you in two turns. They were able to use the Blood Tooth move to really control your opponent, where your opponent can move or pin units, tag shooting units, that sort of thing. So I really value the speed in an army, but raw offensive output isn't the most important part.
How did you go with your Slaanesh army then? Because that's not a very aggressive army, is it? It's more like techie and movement.
Yeah. So that one was that originally was supposed to be 90 Blitzbarb archers with the purple sun and a Kranzbein. But I got to 30 of the actual build of the Blitzbarbs, and I said, there's no way I'm doing this anymore.
The
It's
models killed you.
they look so good, but they for a basic infantry unit are just all hero details. So
Oh, okay.
I converted up some more. I got to 50. That's as many as I was willing to put myself through. But yeah, 50 Blitzbarbs did the trick. Had the Kranzbein there, had Sigvald. And Sigvald coming in off a board edge. Yeah, he did some work. hitting a few I was on stream and one game against my buddy Joe. He Sigvald rolled 12 on his charge for two turns in a row. So he picked up the Coven Throne and then he picked up Neferata in the following turn.
Oh,
It
just
was
melted them.
brutal. But that one was more, yeah, it was more techie. It was more like screen off my Blitzbarbs, let them come in on a board edge if I need to, but otherwise screen them with some Centaur, hold something scary up with the Crown Spine, and then 50 Blitzbarbs is shooting up, 100 shots, and you could get them at Ren 2 with the Purple Sun. They were rerolling ones to hit. I'm like, I just point and click something every turn. It's very straightforward, actually.
Suppose it sort of maybe gave you the challenge of having to do the right target priority as well.
Yeah. And that kind of it, the one thing that went for that and what worked for a lot of the armies that I played was because I wasn't running things that people were familiar with. People, like, that unknown factor really threw people off. Like, not knowing what they needed to target, how they needed to defend, what's the important pieces, And I use that to my advantage. I'll sit there and tell you, this unit does this, this unit does this, these are my army abilities. And I'm like, if you have any questions, let me know. And everybody's cool. Like, yep, nope, that all makes sense. And then at the end of the game, they're always like, okay, so I didn't realize they were gonna do that.
I didn't realize I have no army left at the end of this game.
Yeah, you don't see the pieces, or you don't see the army from looking at the individual pieces.
What were some of the other armies you'd ran earlier in the year then that had sort of on those similar veins of the different off meta picks? Because I think the issue is for a lot of people that aren't evolved in like the small, like sort of tough crowd side is because you have a brother as well, where you hear more the Trentinelli name, and I think like we could get confused with the two just because you both run quite like you're both always at the top end. Because he ran the Night Haunt, didn't he, your brother?
Yeah, he was all Night Haunt all last year, and I ran
Okay.
a lot. So I guess I'll go chronologically. I think it would make sense. I started the year with Skaven.
Okay.
So I was running Old Book Skaven with 9 Storm Fiends, Thankwell,
Oh,
and a
so
Brood.
that was you. Okay, I knew
Yeah.
one of you was running it. That's the thing when you get confused with so
Oh
many
yeah. Oh yeah.
Trentinellis.
I ran that. I did very well with that. Ran that through up into June. Switched into I, at the, at that point switched to Slaanesh with the build that I just talked about. I ran that at a couple of GTs. Then I ran I stole Caleb's list, Caleb Walters' Tzeentch list, and that was but one of the couple times last year that I played with an army that had a positive win rate. So I played that at a couple of tournaments. I took that to the GW Open, Chicago. And then I switched to Khorne and I ran the Skarbrand list.
Big slap daddy himself.
Oh yeah, he's so much fun. He's like he's the same as these Storm Fiends, where it's they're a drug, man. You sit there and you're like, all right, I'm gonna shoot 96 shots at you. They're gonna be 2 damage each, and I'm re-rolling. That was so much fun to say and like play the game with Skarbrand. Like, how many mortal wounds is he going to cause this game? Super fun. But at that point, I was getting a little burned out trying to do really well with bad armies. And so I switched to Gits. And I ran them for the last bits of up until LVO. And I took the Storm Fiends out one more time at LVO. And that was a mistake. That was my worst event of the year.
Okay. Is that because your casting on a seven was undone multiple times?
Not once was it undone. No, the problem with it was it's really a list built for teams because it's so dependent on the matchup. In certain matchups, it's like an auto win nearly because that unit takes off one unit a turn. But in other matchups, it's fighting an uphill battle, and I hit two of those uphill battle matchups. Things didn't quite go my way on them, and I did what I could, but I couldn't overcome it. When I was running it earlier in the year, it was much better because there were fewer of the things that it struggled with in the meta, and then by the time LVO came through, there was way more things that were good. I should have picked up on that and I didn't. I should have just taken Slaves to Darkness, but I'm stubborn and I suffered for it.
You went back to an old love and suffered.
Yeah.
What was the reason? Because I know that's like five armies, four armies over a year's time, which is a lot of different armies to learn and practice. What made you change your army so often?
At the time, I was going for a bunch of different best in faction trophies. Realized, like I said, about November, like none of that mattered. I'm like, I'm done. I completely burned myself out from that project. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm just gonna take gits. I'm gonna throw squigs at people. I'm gonna bite them. And it was a lot more fun. It was way more fun running gits at the tournament. So I should have just been doing that from the day one. But yeah, I was very focused on that, and I think it stemmed from I was supposed to be on the U.S. Worlds team, and some stuff at work happened where I was given the leeway to go, and then it got re revoked.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and so like in my head, I know like that's kind of like the tippy top of what I can expect to do in this game. Like, you know, I should be able to say like, "Hey, Dad, I made it," kind of deal. And in my head, I can because I've proven that I was asked to be on the team. I proven that I should be there, and for other circumstances, I couldn't. But without being able to actually physically go, it feels like it doesn't feel realized. So I'm like constantly chasing that realization that, you know, I've reached the point that I don't want to say mastered the game, but I've become proficient enough in this game to, you know, be considered along some of the better players. Without that physical representation of something, it's been hard to accept that.
That's fair. Are you on the team this year?
I'm not. I'm still at the
Still not
same
realized that
player.
dream yet.
I know it sucks, man. I haven't been able to. Where I live, there's not a lot of opportunity for employment. So I haven't been able to get a new position anywhere. And I tried to kind of essentially draft a agreement that work could sign that says, you know, when the time comes around, I'm good to go. I told the team, I'm like, if I can get that, I will apply as a pl for a player position. But work refused to sign it, so I'm like, I'm not going to put the team through that again. Like, if I can't say for certain I'm going to be there, I'm not going to, you know, to take that time and take the time away from the team if I can't go.
Yeah, that's so rough. Especially if it's something like that where you've been asked to be on and all this stuff, and it's just like out of your control to not be able to get on there.
Well, yeah, because like, so I applied for it last year only after checking with my boss, and they're like, "Yep, sounds good. I've got it marked off. You're going to be good to go." And then, you know, there's a lot of movement at work, and they said no longer you can go. I'm like, ah, you gotta be kidding me. I fought it. I got to the point. I'm like, all right, my union goes, if we want, we can sit and talk to the superintendent. I'm like, I don't want to say anything that could risk my employment, and I might. So I'll pass on that.
Yeah, fair enough. Being employed is a good choice.
Yeah, I kind of need that. I need that money.
How did you go with learning new armies and stuff like that? Because I know I personally struggle. I hate learning new armies. I hate
Yeah.
not knowing the rules and not knowing the most I can get out of an army. How did you find that as an experience moving through all these armies?
Terrible. It's an awful experience. And I don't have a great. Well, I have a fine way to actually practice it. I just hate using TTS. So I'm like never on it. So half the time I go to a tournament and I haven't played the army. I can tell you like conceptually, this is supposed to do this and this. And math says that I should do this and this. But a lot of the times, yeah, like I'll go back to the Summer Slaughter example. When I went to that tournament, it was my first time putting Slaanesh on the table. And it was also my first time playing in that GHB. I just kind of wing it. I wing it, and I have to check my rules a lot. So I try to focus on armies that don't take a terribly long time to play, so that if I do have to double check myself, I'm not eating into time that my opponent could potentially have. I don't know. I do think that playing enough of them gets you in the habit of, even if you don't necessarily know, like, oh, I hit on threes, wound on fours with Ren 1, you at least know what you're supposed to be doing with them as pieces. And checking the profile of something is much easier and faster than taking the time in the middle of the game to try to figure out, where's this piece supposed to be on the board to have its effect. That part, I feel, I can kind of intuit pretty easily.
Well, going back to your previous statement, you definitely feel like if you can throw an army on the table for the first time and go 4-1, I think you've definitely reached that level where you can say you've nearly mastered Age of Sigmar. I don't think many people out there can do that. A lot of people need a lot of reps to get anywhere close to being able to do that sort of stuff. The only person that I've known to be similar was when I spoke to Joel Graham. His first tournament he ever played at, or any games, I think it was his first game in of Age of Sigmar, I think he went 2-3, and then, or might have been 3-2, and then his second tournament he went 4-1. So out of 10 games, he'd won 6 games, and that was his first 10 games playing Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, I think it just kind of comes to some people, right? For some people, it works, and some people, they have to work at it. I know I've been working, I try to help people in my area, and really a lot of them, the only ones that they can go to are the very local tournaments. Either one, there's one store an hour away that does a tournament every few months, they'll do one. And then there's the GT about 2 hours away, roughly. And those are the only games they get. And some of the guys had been playing for years, and the best they can do is a 2-3. When working with those guys, I really try to temper expectations to start with, but then also like meeting what they want. Like if they want to go 3-2, if they want to try to win the tournament, like that's a different outlook and a different way to go about the game than they're just looking to not get rules wrong, not feel frustrated at the table because they don't understand the game or what's going on, and have a good time. Some guys like can just pick it up and they'll go and they'll get their 2 wins that they're looking for. And other ones, other ones want to go 4-1 and it's been years and they're not there. So I think it's super important to keep that in mind too, like make realistic expectations and realize that it's not always going to be something that comes quickly.
Well, it's just a little different on your part on like tempering and sorting out who wants what out of where. So you're doing teaching, I'm guessing, and that's where that all comes from?
Kind of. It's almost more like guiding, right? I live in a very small, very unpopulated area of New York. My closest tournament that I can go to is, or I should say the closest regular tournament that I can go to is almost 4 hours away. So that's why I'm saying like saving on those 1 day tournaments, like save a lot of time not going to them.
Yes.
But there are a few people here who are looking to play, and I think some of them have realized they're not interested in tournament games, but that's all they're exposed to, right? Like they hear tournament recaps and they hear this and that, and it really, they're not tournament players. They're not looking for that. They're looking to actually, they're more narrative side. So we're actually going to be doing a campaign and get some of them together, and we're going to do that instead. And I'm excited for it because I love the lore behind things too. I'm all for it. Trying to, even just figuring that out and trying to get people going in the right direction, because I've seen a few people now who have come in thinking that they wanted to play the game, thinking that they wanted to be a tournament player, getting frustrated and learning, actually I'm more built for the narrative. I'm more for like I want to make a story on the table and do cool shit with my terrible units that I think should be better. And then I get to run weird stuff that I would never bother taking to a tournament. And like I have four Doom Wheels and I have three Lightning Cannons. Why? Because it's super fun to put on the table. Am I going to take that to a tournament? Nah, I'm not going to. But it was very fun to just be able to take it and do weird shit and blow up my own units and that sort of thing.
One of the guys here at my local, they just started up a Path to Glory. And I was not expecting it, but he goes, "Oh, we've got 26 people signed up." Like the local is normally like 10 or so tournament gamers, plus like a game here and there. And I was just like, "Where did all these people come from?" Like they're obviously that sort of crowd where they're more narrative and aren't
Yeah,
tournament
that's the
gamers.
dream, man.
Yeah, and it was just absolutely wild. So I've had every game I've played against pretty much nearly new people.
That's
And
so
so that
cool.
because I sort of took a little bit of a hiatus. I'm like, oh, what a perfect way to get back in to play the Path of Glory. And I thought, oh, sick, I'll enjoy some of the lore and some of the background and stuff like that. And I sat down in my book and spent 2 minutes and then closed my book and said, oh, this isn't for me. Like the back end stuff, I just couldn't do. I had all the dice out because it's cool and I think it's a really unique idea. But with the gits, like you harvest mushrooms and you brew potions. So you've got to
Yeah.
like concoct potions and stuff. And I rolled my first dice to see what mushroom I got. And then I was like, no, I don't care. And just put it all away.
That's so cool though, right? Like the old
It's
Path to
very
Glory was so
cool.
very basic. It was very basic. And now there's like all this weird shit you can do that you're supposed to do, and it's faction specific. Like, it's I mean, I'm in the same boat. I'd roll the first one and be like, I can't be bothered with this right now. But it's super cool that it's in there, and like for people that are it's built for like
It's a unique and cool idea. I think it appeals to a certain crowd, and I don't think the tournament crowd find the enjoyment in that way. Like I enjoy lore. I don't read it a whole lot. I just enjoy hearing about the background of things. I just don't enjoy delving into it too deep on my end, for whatever reason.
I mean that's what it is, right? And it's about switching it up and putting people in the right direction. And that's how you grow the hobby as a whole, right? Like you'll get more tournament players by people starting on the narrative side and wanting to try out the competitive end of it. And you'll get people like I said, I love my I would classify myself primarily as a competitive player, but put me in an environment that we have to like take over territories, and the territories do like game breaking mechanics in your game, and you walk in and you're like, all right, here's my 500 points against your 2500, and there's two of you. All right, let's figure out what I can do here. Like you can do that too. And I think it's like anything that expands or grows the group, that grows the community is a good thing, as long as people kind of stay away from the it doesn't need to be segregated, but people need to chill on like keep your casuals out of the tournament kind of thing too.
Yeah, well, they seem to filter themselves down to where they want to be anyway, I think, unless they've got high like expectations of themselves. I find the people playing the 1 and 4 are having a thrilling time. Like they're what populate your tournament. If you went to a tournament as only competitive players, you'd only end up with like 30 people there, or whatever the masters are. Like that's the other end. It's just a masters tournament, whereas the casuals allow you to play at this nice venue. They allow you to play and get involved with all these things.
And like you said, like, I mean, half the people at the tournament are going to go, have a losing record. Like, that's just the name of the game. And
Statistically.
we're so statistically, it turns out this has to happen. But we're always so focused on like the top tier stuff. And like, while it's exciting, it's cool to see what's happening at the top end, like not forgetting that there's a whole group of people at this event who a lot of them, their goal might not be, I'm not expecting to win all these games or do this or that. I just want to have a good time and roll dice and meet people.
Or even hang out with my friends,
Yes. And
which is
maybe hang out instead of going to the tournament. I had that a few times too.
I do have a question because you said you live so far away. How do you find and how do you prepare for tournaments then? Because that sort of really intrigued me because I thought you were more involved, like you were able to get into a more of a tournament local scene. But hearing that you're so far away from a lot of these places, how do you get involved and how did you like hone your skills then? Because you don't play on TTS a whole
I hate playing TTS, man.
lot.
I mean, to tell you this, I don't like to talk to my by myself in this way, but like I've never had a losing record at a tournament. The worst I've gone is 3-2. I think it just a lot of it comes kind of naturally, but my games are usually at tournaments. I don't get practice games. I've ran a few leagues, or at least was participated in a few leagues last year locally, and we'd get 10 people or so. But my the shop that we have here has a single table, so
I know that pain.
yeah. So to kind of organize anything, it's like each round of the league takes 3 weeks, and like I said, a lot of them are like they're more casual based than anything. So like this league was the way to get people to come in and play, but half the time I'd go to the game and I'm like I have to be careful. Like I could make mistakes that I shouldn't be making. Like it just doesn't matter because I've got this game, and it's just the skill gap. And we have a great time, but like he's not even here to win; he's here to just play, which it's kind of the name of the game, right? It's a game. So a lot of the times leading up to tournaments, I have to just sit down and be like, "All right, what am I trying to do with this list? What learning and being aware of like what the pieces do, and kind of developing a game plan around that." And that's why I don't go for the units that are like big damage dealers. I have to go for like the units like, all right, this is a piece that supports this other one. This piece is an objective grabber. It's going to go and sit on an objective and not move. Like that unit of 36 squigs from the squig herd, you're going to give them the 5-up ward. They're going to go sit on that objective and they're going to sit there for 2 turns, maybe three. I don't need to see my opponent's army to be able to know that that's the game plan for that unit. But on the flip side, being aware of and being in the discords that I'm in and seeing like, hey, this is this new army coming out. This is what it does. And being able to be on the lookout for it, gives you at least the awareness of their pieces do this and this. They have these types of pieces. And try to take all your decisions without rolls, dice rolls in mind. It leaves a lot of the variance out and means that you're making decisions based on more like chess than you are with any kind of dice. It's not a dice game at that point. And I think you need less practice with that mindset. There's always like the practice is always going to help in like positioning and deployment. You're always going to be in a better spot with to be able to practice and put it on the table and see how it really works. But at least conceptually, you can figure out what units are supposed to do.
Would you say as well a lot of your base skills came from you playing 40K?
No, I was terrible at that. I was terrible at 40K. We were so bad. Because we were kids, man. We were kids when we were playing that game. And like I said, half the time we were making up rules as we went. Even as we got to the tournaments, I'm like, I have no idea how this works. I'd get to the game and be like, I don't know, man. If you tell me it works that way, I believe you. I think it's from like I'm willing to put a lot of mental effort into something. Like I said, I'm very competitive with, and that translates also to like if I decide I'm going to do something, I'm going to dedicate a lot of energy to it. And in this case, it's mental energy, but it's kind of my outlook on everything. That's how it comes up. I take things to the extremes.
Obsessive, like
getting
most of us
into,
in the hobby.
yeah, I'm getting into running. I'm going to go run a marathon. I'm getting into lifting. I'm going to lift, X amount on all my lifts. I was getting into fighting and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get a fight. I'm going to be a fighter. And all these things I take to like the ends of it. So even though I don't get a lot of time to practice, like I'm going in thinking I want to be good at this game and put that mental energy at least into it.
Yeah, it's actually how I was speaking about Joel earlier. I think you both have the same mindset there because I think he's a farmer, and he said he would spend all day thinking about games and theories and ideas, And it sounds very much like you do the same thing as well. You're mentally thinking about movement and gaming and like tactics all day. Would that be something that you concur with?
I think it's more just in the game. Like when I'm there, I'm like, I'm putting it into the game. When I'm outside the game, I'm some more like, I might be thinking like, hey, this conversion seems pretty sweet. What else? Brain fart. Now, to be honest with you, I mean, I don't want to sound redundant or don't want to sound dumb, but like the game is pretty straightforward, right? Like you go, you stand on circles. If you stand
You
on
score
circles
points.
longer than your opponents, you win. I don't think right now there's so much interplay between your opponents to like necessitate that. That level thing. And I'm not thinking about this game constantly. I'll obsess over, like I said, like conversion ideas and wanting to organize myself that way. But outside of the game, I got other things I want to
You
do.
got a life to live.
Yeah, I got so many, I got things on my list I got to get done.
Yep. Did you enjoy, like, what in terms of AOS 2 and AOS 3, do you enjoy either one differently, or one would you give a preference for with your play styles?
I think when AOS 3 came out, I said I liked 2 better. And I can't remember 2 enough to the point to be able to remember it to know. They're fun. And like I said, I'm getting to the point, man. I'm enjoying the people that come to the table with me. If we're playing AOS 1, we're playing AOS 2, we're playing Path to Glory, like I'm just here for a good time. I think at 2 got a little stale. Like got very tired of seeing Seraphon over and over, and I'm sure there's going to be something coming up here pretty soon that I'm tired of. I'm already tired of Teclis Sentinels, but with how frequently books are being released, I think it's exciting right now, not because of the addition of the game, but because the game state's so frequently being changed with all this new stuff.
Didn't even have a chance to settle, like it's a new book every or two books every month.
Yeah,
Like,
it's
how is
nuts.
someone supposed to figure out the meta in that time frame? So it does keep it very, it's a very excitable time in the hobby in terms of like it's just constant go at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a little frustrated with the. I wish there were more good missions because I feel like we end up playing the same couple missions every time. There's like 7 playable missions, and so you play 5 of those 7 every time. There's a lot of repeats. I don't know what the fix is to that. I'm just going to complain about it. But
That's
the
what we do, though.
yeah, that's exactly. We're really good gamers. We complain about things. So I do wish there was a little bit wider set of playable missions, but overall, I think it's in a good state and I'm enjoying it.
How do you feel about, like, you enjoyed all the battle tactics and all that sort of coming into it all?
Yeah, I think the battle tactics is what make the turns interesting. Because if there was no battle tactics and there's no grand strategy, the game was just sit on the objectives for longer, which I mean, still pretty much is, but at least the battle tactics force you to make some like decisions based on how the game is progressing that you don't necessarily you can't think about ahead of time. So, you know, your decision on battle tactics, you're going to have 5, 6, 7 that you can realistically get, and you know, sometimes it influences your list building. So, with the old Gitz book, I had to take the battle tech or the battalion that like the bodyguard battalion, the one that gives you the sworn protector thing. Not because I needed or was planning on using that, because I don't want any of my Gitz champions in combat, but it just gave me access to a fifth battle tactic because the book didn't have any. So it can influence list building, it can influence decisions within the game itself, like you know, I really don't want to shift this unit off of this objective, but the only way to get a battle tactic is to do so. And you know, if a game is close, that one battle tactic might be the decider. So it creates another decision point in the game that allow like that's where the skill expression comes through, right? And that's I appreciate that about it.
Have you lent into armies sort of at the moment and probably previously that were more able to complete those battle tactics, or you found you just picked the army and didn't
I was just picking them, and that was a mistake because, again, at the time, Tzeentch, when I was playing it, didn't have any. Khorne's was quite tough to hit at the time. Skaven didn't have any book tactics at the when I was playing them earlier in the year. And then, yeah, Gitz didn't have any. And again, let me tell you, now that I'm playing slaves, I'm like, oh, I got like three battle tactics that are pretty doable. Like it's way easier, even though it actually makes it. Does make it easier because now the generic battle tactics are much harder. So not having a if you have book tactics that you can get, that's a huge advantage.
What are your thoughts? Because I know there's been a big discussion about battle tactics, and you've played a lot of books that didn't have them. Do you like that there is good ones in battle tomes, or would you prefer the opposite way, where it's pretty much there's one that's maybe doable, and the rest are all the basic GHB ones?
Now, I like that there's the only I was okay. So I like that the battle tactics, because for the most part, the battle tactics are not automatic. None of them are. There might be a couple here and there, but I mean, overall, they're still requiring you to do something on the same level roughly as the basic ones, but you get to build into them at least a little bit. You can build your army to do some of them. The grand strat, I feel the same, except for any of them that are like automatic. So I hate the Tzeentch one. That's just like have nine value in your destiny dice. I'm like, well, I literally can't interact with that. I cannot stop you from having that. So those ones I don't enjoy, but the rest of them, I like that there's ones in books and gives a lot of variation and lets you build in different ways.
Well, especially since you were taking armies that didn't even have them for half the time, and you would have been playing against a lot of armies that did have the easier time because they had the easier battle tactics. So it's nice to see that your opinion, even though you didn't have them, was still for having good battle tactics in books.
Yeah, anything that makes the game more interesting. Like, does it add a little bit layer of complexity? Yeah. Is the game pushing 3 hours? Yeah. But I still like it. It makes it, yeah, it makes it so that when you walk up to the table, you can't go, this game's solved. Like
Yeah, okay.
previously there were times that you'd walk to the table and before battle tactics, before a lot of that stuff, it's like, as long as you don't play like an idiot, I can't win this game. Like
Like
I
the old
can't.
Hero Hammer Slash.
Yeah. Like I could not beat that list. If as long as they didn't play, as long as they played intelligently, I wasn't winning it.
You like an unsolved game, surprisingly.
Yeah. I want, like I said, I'm big on skill expression. I want there to be a way to like put your own influence into the game and like have your choices matter and create something. And I love that the game is built in a way that people can make different decisions and make different army compositions and play and kind of express themselves on the table game wise and create that. So there's the artistic side of I'm gonna paint, model my own stuff, build my board, do all this, that, and the other. But people kind of, I think, overlook the fact that you can show a bit of personality just in simply the units you pick and the way you play them.
Well, everyone has their own pet unit as well they like to throw in their army.
Or even just like there's the pet units, and we're kind of suffering from like netlist syndrome, right? Like there's so many books out there with good lists, but only one gets played because this one did well at a tournament, and it gets taken and it gets adopted by everybody and it does well. And it doesn't mean that there isn't other good lists in there, but and I don't blame them. If like somebody else did the work, they already showed that this list works. Like I'll run that.
You're not very much a net lister then, I take it.
I did a lot last year. And it partially because I was in a big hurry. So like the Khorne book or the Khorne list and the Tzeentch list I just took. I'm like, I know these work. I have a tournament in a month. I want to get them ready. The Skaven book, or the Skaven army and the Slaanesh army, I worked on with a few other people. We kind of were brainstorming things and thoughts. And at some point I just said, yep, that's what I'm taking. I'm going to build that. Yeah, it was hit and miss, but I do enjoy being able to build my own thing. My slaves list that I'm running right now, I just took. Marshy there, I just took his list, and Phil Marshall, I should say. I just took his list. I was talking to him at LVO. He goes, yep, you just run this and it works. And I'm like, yep, it does. It works real good.
Do what it says on the box.
It does exactly that. It works real good. I've got some changes I want to make to it, but that'll let me make it my own. But for at least this first tournament I went to with it, I just took his.
If you generally had more time, would you like to be able to just sit down and plan and write out your own list? Or do you enjoy taking the net list because it just works?
No, I want to make my own list. And like this Soulblight project, I'm definitely going to be at most workshopping lists with some people that I kind of go to for that sort of thing. But like I said, my original slaves list, before that I was actually playing Daughters of Cain. Those were lists that I built them the way I liked. I built them to do things that I wanted them to do. They didn't exactly have the same units that other people were running, but I liked the way that it ran. And I was very comfortable with it. And I feel like I did better with those lists that I felt very intimately familiar with all the parts to it and what the expectation is than, taking it from somebody else and doing it. Because everybody has their own play style, and there's parts that somebody else puts in the list that maybe you don't know why it's there, or you think it's for this reason, but it's for a different reason. And, in a list with the way that you run it, you shouldn't have that piece. Even if you took 90% of the rest of it, that piece needs to get moved and replaced with something that suits you better.
Well, especially like with your examples with the Slaanesh and Skaven, if you're not getting test games in with some prior, how are you ever going to know what that person has a desire for those models to be? When you're the one that's planning and trying to organize your own list, you know where the bubbles are and you know what units you want to do for what role. If you just grabbed a random net list for your first tournament game, you're going to have no clue where any of it all goes.
Yeah. And when it's not a net list, it leans back into that point I had earlier about like that unknown factors. Like, dude, I don't know what that shit across the tail of me is doing. Like I said, you told me everything it does, but I don't know what it's doing. I don't know what your goal is here. And so when it's not a net list, people can't refer to it and see what it's doing or have a write up on it. They kind of have to interpret it. And it's almost like more pure Warhammer because it does. It's like there's not the support of the internet at large behind you in the sense of like the list writing aspects, at least.
We have a guy on our team, Sam Morgan. He does that to like utmost. Like his lists generally are like so out there and so wild that no one understands it but him, what's going on. You don't know what to target, what's going to be the end result here. And it's just absolutely wild.
My first round of it, we did a TTS tournament. As much as I hate it, I still participate here and there.
Yeah,
we did one just in the club, and my first round was against Sam. that was the first outing with the Storm Fiends.
What did he bring for a TTS match? Because he can bring whatever he wants.
Oh yeah, it was like 18 Trogs with the old book.
Okay,
Trogs don't like Storm Fiends. Turns out they probably do now. But they didn't then. And even then I was like, all right, conceptually, I know what this unit does. I know what this army does. It's point and click. And then once you start doing it, you're like, oh, 96 shots. Oh, I'm going to teleport them across. Oh, loving it. Or getting charged with blocks of 30 Saurus warriors with Thankful. You're like, oh, that was a mistake. They're all dead.
I love the only time Thankful done me dirty was against Phoenix Guard, because on average they survived by one model, or like average they died by one model. So models that like that, they're very frustrating because you don't know which way the dice are going to swing. But against every other model, you're like, oh, I love rolling these 120 dice because every single one of those models is dead.
Yep, that was my big pick for anti squigs, and my anti squig technology was Thankful, and then I sold them. Like, I've got the answer. I have the solution to this army, guys. It's just Thankful and Storm Fiends. I'm going to sell it.
It's too popular. I figured it out. It's solved.
Yep. That's game's done. Give me a new one.
Well, it leads perfectly. I've got some listener questions here. As you said, you enjoy talking to people and you enjoy the community. Well, the community has asked you a lot of questions.
Love
it. Not sure if you've had a chance to read through some of them.
Not one.
But we've got first up here, we've got, big surprise for you then. We've got Nick True. When you look at an army that you want to play to win, what aspects of the army make it desirable? I think we went over most of that, but do you have any last points for that?
Yeah, even when I say I'm going to play to win, it's still usually with, I'm going to play to win with this one army that I actually want to play. And I'll figure it out when I get there.
Beautiful. And then how do you approach your deployment with armies?
For the most part, honestly, for a lot of armies, it's very similar, especially with armies that don't have any kind of teleportation shenanigans. I'll kind of find a setup that works for a particular mission and against an archetype, and we'll play to that. Most of the missions are so similar and objective placement and just overall goal that, I'm more building or deploying to counter what type of army I'm playing against. As long as things stay in the buff bubbles, and I can prevent armies like Iron Jaws or Old Dragons or something like that from just being in my face and tying my whole army in turn one. I'm usually okay with that, but it's so complex, man, because sometimes you want to bait that out. You want them to be please come in, kill this very important unit that I've left on the front line on purpose. But
enjoy some tasty bait.
Yeah, please, please come and take that. I will not, I promise to not remove you with the rest of my army. And you gotta play it up. You gotta get in their head about it. I'm gonna place this unit on the line and be like, and how far away are we? We're 18. Okay, I moved 10. So I'm gonna move 10. I moved my lowest charge roll to a 4. I could charge 3d6. So I'm gonna be safely I have a pretty safe 25-inch threat range. And just saying that will usually make people counter deploy in a way that it's safe to give away turn one.
You enjoy the mind games, then, I take
it. Oh, I love the mind games.
Are you a person that has a lot of written aids, or is it all mental in terms of deployment maps and setups and all that sort of stuff? Or are you a written person?
I don't practice it or anything like that. I just start throwing it down and be like, yeah, that looks pretty good. Or I'll start kind of placing some units, because most of my armies are one drop. So I'll start placing some stuff and be like, all right, if I do this, what is the most chancy I can get? What's the riskiest way I can do this and still have all my coverage, and then kind of refine it from there? But it's usually a pretty quick because I can deploy everything at the same time. It's usually a pretty quick little process.
And I suppose that plays into the mind games, because if you come up against someone, if you're on the opposite end to you, and you just see this guy come down, plonk his army very confidently in all these places, because you're sort of, you're doing the one drop and you've got your deployment sort of figured out in your head, that can play into, oh, he knows what he's doing straight away, and you're unprepared for it because they're trying to counter against your deployment and all this sort of stuff, and then you just come in and plonk your stuff there.
And then it's great too to just start shooting the shit with them in the middle of it all. Yeah. This guy's not even taking it seriously.
The last part to his question: who is the coolest Mussolini, Mustachelini, or Nate, and why?
So he's referring, there's actually four, there's me and my three brothers. And so those are, there's Muscle Nelly.
There's three of you. Okay.
There's, I thought four, there was of only us. Two. There's four.
Oh, sorry. I thought there was only two brothers and you. So there's four, yeah, of you. Okay.
So One is just a monster of a human. He's very, very strong.
Is that the one in the photo with you and your other brother
Yeah,
at
we're
the
picking him
okay.
up. Yeah, he's a big boy. He's got like the New York State bench press record for his weight class and all.
Okay.
Like
Is
he's
he
a big boy.
the oldest brother?
I'm the oldest.
You're the older. Okay.
I am the oldest. I'm also possibly the shortest, so
Okay.
it's a little annoying. But and then the youngest is Mustachinelli because he grows a terrible mustache, but it's very funny and he commits to it, so it works. And then Nate's Nate. I refuse to comment on which one's coolest because I'll get in trouble. Now I can't say Nick lives at the gym, so I don't know if that makes him cooler or less cool. I think it's one of those ones that at some point you go from like it makes you cool to not.
Yep.
So like I'll leave that up to the listeners to decide like how cool is like 6 hours at the gym or 2 hours a day at the gym make you.
Yep. And so he's the one that comes to tournament with you guys and just comes for the fun of it.
Yeah, he just comes to chill. It's great. He's an honorary tough crowd.
That's sick. That's also good to hear, like people that aren't involved with the hobby still enjoy being around everyone else that's playing the games.
Oh yeah.
Well, it leads perfectly into like Tom, just Tom. When is the massive Trentinelli going to hit the circuit so we can stop with with Nate being the best looking player in the world?
I think we heard in the intro that I was the best looking Trentinelli.
Indeed.
And it's on the internet, so it's got to be true.
Internet never
Nick,
lies.
actually, when we were playing 40K, Nick was playing with us. And he stopped when we started like first we're getting in the tournaments. Not because he doesn't like the tournaments, because he's just as competitive as we are. And don't let Nate pretend to tell you that he's not competitive because he is. He just isn't willing to outright say it like I am.
Okay.
Nick found the gym at that time in his life, and so he kind of dropped the game for that. And I think he likes, like we were just saying, he likes the crowd, he likes the environment. I think he just wants to go to chill. He doesn't really want to play anymore. The youngest one, he wants to play, but he's in the Air Force. He does a lot of moving around, so he doesn't really have the time to relearn the game and get into the scene anymore.
What's the age difference between like all of yous then?
So the age difference between me, Nate, and Nick are all 3 years apart from each other, and then Nick and John are two. So we're pretty close.
For the next one here, I've got another one from my lover Tough Crowd member, Shaunza. Which iconic Sylvester Stallone character do you identify more strongly with, Rambo or Rocky? Why?
Rocky. I'm Rocky. I love to fight. And I don't see myself killing anybody.
I think
It's
most people see it that way in the world.
yeah. I think that one's a pretty easy one. Plus, I mean, I'd rather be rich than like I'd rather be jacked and rich than jacked in a fucking
The jungle
jungle
or wherever
somewhere.
else. Been some, what was he called? Was he not a strangler? He was a someone that goes through town to town. A drifter. He was a drifter, wasn't
Yeah.
he?
You know what? Actually, I don't want to be either one of those two. Actually, I'd want to be Rocky. I think I'm most like Sylvester Stallone in Over the Top, where I'm just a arm wrestling truck driver. That sounds more like me.
Also guessing you own night visual goggles? Is
Yeah,
this the castle story?
that's a castle story. I don't own them. I wish I did. I happened to pawn some night vision goggles at
As
the
you do.
castle, as you do, as a normal every night would go, and decided that I was gonna be night mode Anthony for a few hours at the castle. Copious amounts of alcoholic beverages was involved, which helps become night mode Anthony. But yeah, it was a good time, just wandering around inside, outside the castle in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania.
The
Got some night
castle
vision.
sound, as an outsider, the castle sound like an awesome time, especially when you got night mode Anthony around.
Yeah, you got, I mean, that's probably where you're gonna see him. No, Castle was the best.
What is also the single best Italian food?
Oh shit. Whatever grandma makes. Is that copping out?
Yes, you've got to name it though.
So I'm not a like just pasta guy. Like
Okay.
I gotta have some sort of protein built into it. And I'm not a fan of like just a like, you know, like bolognese or anything like that. I need like a full on a meal with it. So I mean you could just cheap out and say like a chicken or veal parm, but I've been big on the marsala lately.
What is someone, because in Australia, I suppose if you're in the southern part of Australia, it's more Italian. What is Marcelan? Would you say Marcelan?
Marsala.
Masala. Okay. What is masala?
So basically it's you'll see a lot of the Italian dishes are actually named after regions, or I think Marsala is a specific type of wine sauce or something like that. But it's a mushroom and like white sauce. It's a good one.
Okay.
Could also actually, I'm realizing that I'm cheaping out and like skipping all of the seafood options, but I don't know, man. That's a tough one.
Matt, you're asking the tough questions here, Sean.
He's killing me, man.
Who knew that would
Supposed
be
to
the
be my
hardest
friend.
question of them all?
That's been the hardest one by far.
Well,
God, killing
here's
me.
an easy one for you from your good friend Joe. What color undies are you wearing?
They are, hold on. Oh, shock, they're black.
No,
It was like a 50-50 toss up between black and gray.
don't think anyone wears white undies. I don't know.
Nobody
I
I've
don't know
talked to.
white was ever a thing. Why was white undies a thing?
It seems like a bad choice.
It does. Both ends seem like a bad choice.
My friends don't wear white undies.
Yeah. I've got another one from Baal Ong or Baal the Carl. When does your revenge tour end? And then from me, what is the revenge tour?
So I'll let you in on the revenge tour first. So the revenge tour is Anthony going into hard mode because so last year, throughout the year, like I said, I went 5-0 or 4-1 at every tournament that I went to, except for LVO. And I say it based on the ITC tournament cycle. My goal was to be top three ITC last year, so that this year I can stop caring about it. I would have achieved that trophy that says in my mind, like I'm there, I did it. Like that physical, like I was saying, that physical representation of like I've been there, I've made it. And LVO happened. I took a bad army. I went 3-2, and so I ended up fourth overall because I was second going in. And
Okay.
basically, as long as two particular people didn't go 5-0, I had it. And of course, those two people did go 5-0. And so I lost out by a couple points. So the revenge tour is Anthony this year is taking good armies. Actually, Anthony's taking armies he likes that luckily the armies he likes are finally good. And we're going to win every game. I'm never going to lose again.
You heard it here first.
You heard it
Never
here
losing a
first.
game.
I am never going to lose again.
Is there a bounty on your first loss then?
There should be. Somebody will pick it up. No, it I so Bud from Party at the All Points came through. He did his Warhammer Wellness tour. He stopped by the one day. He goes, he was on his cruise, his tour there through the Canada, through the States. He stopped by my hometown. We got dinner. He goes, "You want to play a game?" I'm like, "No, not really. I don't want to play Warhammer. I want to hang out." So he's like, "All right, that's cool with me." And so we watched the entirety of Shoresy, and I'm like, "Bud,
Oh,
you're gonna have me crying here, man, because this is hitting me in the feels." So I'm
wow.
like, "That's where I get it." I'm like, "He, I'm like, I am. I that's me. I
I've
hate."
found me in Persona on TV.
I found me in like in a terribly Canadian like parody. Like I hate losing. I don't like to win. I hate losing. and I'm never going to lose again this year. I'm just taking it. That's the revenge tour, and it's over when I'm done. I don't know when that is yet.
So do you see yourself as the Shorty character? I'm just looking at the show then, because I've heard of the show from Bud's thing, but I've never.
You gotta watch it, man. It's okay. So good. It's so good.
I'll be looking out for you then. I'll be like, oh, that's Anthony there, right there.
Yeah, you're gonna see a lot of me.
Yeah.
Crying at the random little crying at team meetings and aggressively yelling at everybody. Yeah.
Well, here's another one. Well, not another one, but here's one from Dayton as well. Why are rompers the future of competitive gaming wear?
Oh, that's a great one. Rompers, like,
are you a fan of them?
I own three now. Dayton got me onto them, and now they're becoming my favorite thing to wear at a tournament. And the reason why they're the future is because nobody like looks at somebody in a floral romper and says, "Oh no, I have to play this person." Like it's the easiest way to walk up to somebody and just like start off on a good note. Also, they're super soft and comfortable, and they're very airy. So when you're in the sweaty gaming halls, you're not like sweating through all your clothes. Normally the legs don't go down so far, so you can show off your thighs. People
show off those squatting thighs.
The girls love it. All three there, and the girlfriends there, any of them there, they love it. And also, you got to realize it's a commitment. So like when you're committing to the romper, you're committing that you've taken your shit for the day. And you're not going to go again until the end of the day.
Because you're going to be like a girl and pull down the whole thing to get it.
You
got to
take the whole thing off. And let me tell you, man, if you're not used to it, getting a romper off, if you got to do it in a hurry, it's not happening. There's a lot of flailing around until you finally get that first sleeve off.
My issue is the same one that Noah has with them. I don't like the attachment. I don't like that the shorts and the shirt are attached.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's nice and comfy, and I don't got to worry. Like, I'm all about it.
You're obsessed with them, it sounds like.
If I could wear them at work, I would. Work has already said no. I've asked.
Just wear a jumper over the top and they'll never know.
Yeah, that's true. But then there's still shorts, and work doesn't like shorts.
Just secretly wear it under clothes or something like that.
I'm just going to start flashing people my romper.
Yeah, just open like a Superman shirt. Just open it out and you're like, oh, here's my romper.
That's mildly inappropriate. That also feels on brand, so it's all good.
Mike Ackerby is asked, where does your love of birds come from?
I do love me a bird. I don't know. I worked at a wildlife center when I was in grad school. Or no, undergrad. At a rehabilitation center. But my job was cleanup, but also I worked with birds of prey. I would take them to schools and churches and the mall and do essentially education for them. It was really cool to do that. But I think I've just always been into them, man. I think if I could be an animal, it would be some sort of bird of prey.
I think they're definitely some of the most unique and coolest.
Yeah,
like the whole thing around them, because we've got quite a few zoos around us, and they've all got birds of prey enclosures, and I've spent ages there because they're really interesting the way it all works with their ecosystem with them.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't know. I love the idea. Like, after just gonna, I don't know, flying, just to be able to fly, man. Like that would be, it's like the one thing that we can't do. Like we can. Humans can swim, like, I mean, it's not well, but we can at least see what it would kind of be like. I have no idea what it'd be like to fly, but man, I'd love to.
Would you do a wingsuit then?
Yeah, I'm all for any of that, like a big adrenaline junkie thing, anything like that, I'm in.
I think that's probably the closest way we could ever get to flying would be a wingsuit. And I think they're always very cool when I see them, like, one of the shows pops up on TV or something like that. They seem very entertaining.
Oh yeah, I'd be all about it someday. It's on the list.
Yeah, I don't think it's really a possible thing for most people because of, like, obviously they're not tandem. They're like a one person thing where you need to be highly skilled to use it. Otherwise, I mean, what's the end result if you can't use it properly?
I mean, all yeah, right. Well, you'll do it once.
It's not
In
like
all,
skydiving where you can just do one skydive with a tandem.
yeah, in all likelihood, that's where I'll have to end up going, is skydiving port, which would be close enough, good enough.
I enjoy skydiving. Done the once with the tandem. It was a good experience.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Like I wasn't sure what to expect, but I thoroughly enjoyed the thrill of it all.
Yeah, it
It's a
seems
good
like it'd be a
time.
good time.
It's over a lot quicker than you want it to be.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Although hopefully a little longer than it could be.
That is very true. We've got two left here for you. I've got a really long one at the end, but
All
a bit
right.
shorter one here. This is from Josh Trenholm. Being the undisputed Lord of Chaos, which god do you most identify with?
Know if I get to be called the Lord of Chaos. I've definitely played them all, but I don't know if I get to be the Lord. Which guy do I identify closest with? Slaanesh is my favorite one, and I guess if I had to like dedicate to one of them, it would be Slaanesh. The rest of them sound miserable.
Tzeentch followers, what do they get then? Because I know obviously Khorne, you're either just gonna die in a bloody heap. And obviously Nurgle was just disgusting. What is a Tzeentch thing gonna be? Do you just get random mutations?
Dude, I think Tzeentch, you just go insane, which sounds like that's. I would rather be.
But
So,
you're
all right.
insane,
So,
so you wouldn't be confident of what you're doing.
I don't know about that, brother. So a little background. I'm a school counselor. I have a background in mental health stuff. So, people who are like the most concerning people, like the people who are most concerned, are the ones who recognize that what they're thinking and like what their thoughts are is like nuts. Like, there will be people who would be like, I know that the government is not trying to contact me through the static on the TV. However, I can't stop myself from thinking that that's the case. Like, that sounds like hell.
That does actually sound pretty bad. I would not want that.
Slaanesh sound like they're all bad. They're all bad. But at least Slaanesh sounds fun for a while. Corn
The first
would be
30
a
seconds.
second. Yeah, corn would be a second. I would take my physical body falling apart before my mental state.
Yeah, that
So,
is true. That's
Nurgle and
probably
Siege.
putting it in those terms. I think, yeah, you're probably correct there. Yeah, Slaanesh, you at least get a few seconds of fun. And then Khorne, you're probably, depending on what way it is, you either become a mighty chaos champion or you just turn into a bloody heap on the ground.
Yeah, I think corn like goes towards your like my desire to be like the best of something, to be like the top end of it. But Slaanesh feels like, if I'm gonna be honest, like Slaanesh feels like the most realistic one. Like, yeah, we would all like the epitome of what feels good. Yeah, it's gonna be perverted into the point that it's not gonna feel good. Like, being edged to infinity sounds like another form of hell. But at least it's not my body rotting away or my mind going,
Yeah.
like literally going.
I suppose you've got, well, yeah, two sides. One's body and mind, and the other one's excessive to the other degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think you've hit the nail on the head with that's the right order everyone should be in then.
Yes, I'm right. Listen.
Who has the belt and when are you going to claim the belt?
Oh, okay. So Nate has the belt right now.
Who did he win that from? Was that Dayton?
He won that from Dayton at Castle, and then he hasn't had to defend it because he hasn't run into anybody. I would like it, but I think Sam Morgan is going to try to take it from him at Everwinter. So
Ooh, so
I can't
Sam's
step in
going
front
over,
of
is he?
that. He's coming over.
Oh, bringing it back to Australia where it rightfully belongs.
That would be a Sean will have to take it from him. Just go between, it'll go between those guys forever.
The last bit of his question, Archaon or
Oh fuck.
Balachor? That's the tough questions now.
Yeah, Jesus. Archaon.
Why Archaon?
I think it's a case of like, Archaon has it all offered to him and he actively refuses it, whereas Bellicor, that's all he's going for and he can't get it.
Because he's lost it.
Yeah, I think they both are interesting and they're both very cool, and I have both of them in the display cabinet. But I mean, also, I mean, what are you like? Bellicor is like the Dark Prince or something, the Prince of Shadows. And then you got Archaon, who's like the ever chosen, the Grand Marshal of the Apocalypse. Like, you can't have a name like that and then not be cool.
So who do you reckon is the smarter one then? Because was it Bellicor was the one that was trapping the Stormcast souls, or was that Archaon?
That was Bellicor.
Okay. Would you say Bellicor is like the more smarter, devious one then?
He's definitely more devious, but I don't know if he's smarter. Because I mean, at the end of the day, he's still subservient to
Yeah.
Archaon. So you gotta go with the boy in charge, right?
That's fair. Well, we've got one last one. This is going to be the longest one, I think, but it's
Uh-oh.
going to be a nice questions from Stella Nice. What's your favorite dice roll to hit in the game?
The 12-inch charge with Sigvald.
Yeah, it is very
It
tasty.
is so
I
good.
think my favorite one for sure is going to be like a 3d6 charge with like a stone horn.
Oh yeah. It's that same, like
Yeah.
you hit the high end of a high roll that has huge implications after the fact.
And then what's your least favorite to flub?
The worst feeling is, and this happened at LVO. It's a priority role that you've already kind of thrown everything to the wind, and you're like, all right, I can claw this game back if I hit this priority role. And you see them roll a one, and you're like, all right, it's here, anything but a one. And you know what's gonna happen. It feels like every time. It's clearly not, but it feels like every time. Like that, honestly, I'd rather see them roll a two. Because that dread hits. You see the one, you're like, oh no. Oh, this is gonna feel so bad when I roll this one.
The guy I spoke with last week, Gavin, that's what he does. He always hits the one. Like his play style is very much, I'll need to win a priority just to get this game back on track. We'll roll a one, and he just like breaks down on the ground because he knows he's going to roll the one, and he does it every time.
It's the worst feeling. And then yeah, when you and it's a mental trick, right? Like you don't always roll it, but you definitely remember what times you do.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and then it's really bad when you're like, oh no, I know I'm going to roll it, and then you do. It's game over. You've lost, mentally lost already.
Yeah. Yeah, you just check out then. You're just like, I had my chance and I've lost it.
That was fun.
And the last two part of question out of all of them left. Who do you currently enjoy watching play?
Watching play?
Yeah, do you watch, are you like a person that watches battle reports or live streams?
So I will say I used to be. I do, and or I said, and when I was, it was typically Season of War. Not just because I've gotten to know them, but also because they felt like they had everything down, and they were very purposeful in what they were presenting. But honestly, at this point, I don't watch games because it's just not particularly fun for me. It's the same as like I played baseball all through high school. I hate watching baseball. It's the worst, man. So I really don't watch a lot of games. What I will do is I'll sit in because I'm in the Worlds chat for US Worlds team for Discord. And I'll watch their games and see what's happening, but I rarely watch a whole game through. It's usually like I'm at the gym and I'm on the elliptical or something like that, and I just need something to watch while I'm there. Or I'm, building models or something like that. It's something to have in the background to see what's going on. But I don't know. I do not enjoy watching this. I do not enjoy watching
Yeah,
Warhammer Blade.
that's fair. I'm in the same camp. When I first started, I maybe watched one or two battle reports, but I just can't get into battle reports, and I don't really watch live games unless like we all sat down and watched like the Worlds because it's a bit of a different thing.
Yeah.
But I don't watch people play games. I don't in any form really. It's not enjoyable to me.
It's not. It's not. And I think Rob has actually said that. He goes, "This game is not fun." So his commentary has to keep people invested and keep people interested. And he does a good job at that. And that's a skill to have because you'll watch some of these guys who don't have that and are just like, I'm just going to stream this. And you've got people on there that aren't making the game enjoyable and like really injecting a lot of energy. It's like, man, we're watching people roll dice and move little plastic pieces around. This is not like entertaining.
Yeah, the fun comes in the mental process of playing the actual game.
Yeah, it's playing, or really at that point, you're relying on the casters to inject that entertainment in.
And the last part of the question, who's your favorite painter right now? What painter do you enjoy looking at for content wise?
So that's a tricky question because usually what happens is when I see a good painter, I get mad at myself because I'm like, I don't know. So I guess my answer is Richard Gray. I really enjoy his paint style. And it frustrates the hell out of me watching him paint like on his Patreon or watching him on YouTube because I'm watching the entirety of the process. I see the whole thing done and I still don't understand how he goes from stippling heavily watered down paint to getting these like super smooth blends and whatnot. I'm like, this is wizardry and I hate this because now I feel bad because I can't do it. And like, I'm not a bad painter and I really actually do take pride in like the end result of the paint that I get. And what do they say? Comparison is the, and I don't remember what the hell it's called. There's a saying about comparing yourself to others is what takes the enjoyment out of it to begin with. And it's totally true. And again, competitive nature says you got to at least like you got to at least size yourself up to that. And it doesn't look good.
That top echelon of painters is just wizardry. It's literally like they're
Exactly.
casting magic spells at the models because it makes no sense how they can do what they've done to get that result and that amount of
Right.
time as well.
It's yeah, and my buddy Joe there, he too is like he paints so fast. I don't understand. He paints three times as fast as I do, and to a better result. And that pisses me off too. I'm like, listen, we can't. You're not allowed to do this. I need to be able to compete here.
Give me some leeway at least. Also, because I noticed on your profile, you like to lick paint. What's your favorite flavored paint?
They're all terrible. I don't have a favorite. I will say the oh shit, which one was it? The washes are the worst.
Yes. Yep. They taste
they're
horrible.
the worst flavor. There's not a good one, but there's definitely bad worse ones. That whole, lick the tip of the brush to keep it pointy. The pro painter moves.
The thing we all develop slowly over time because it's nice and efficient.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And my light wife will look at me and she goes, "Why are your teeth blue?" And I'm like, "Well, I was painting." And she goes, "Oh, all right." It's not a good answer. It's not a good thing I'm doing, but she's gotten used to it.
Well, that's all the questions there. There's quite a few, quite a popular person there.
All
And my
right.
last question for you is, what's next for yourself? What plans you got for tournaments? I know you've been talking about your army already, but what's next for Anthony?
So the plan is, like I said, I'm focusing on GTs this year. I'm kind of putting the one dayers to the side. Just not feasible for me time wise. I'm gonna basically, I think the plan is gonna be run slaves until I get the Soulblight army done to the point that I'm satisfied with it.
How, sorry to cut you off, how long do you think that project will take you? How long, sorry, better question. How long do you want it to take and how long do you think it's going to take?
So to get a playable army going, I'd like to have an army done in probably by the end of June would be the first bit. But I think it'll be like my slaves and like my gits, where there's just constantly going to be things that I can add on to it that it'll be a continuous project. So I think I'll start playing them at tournaments in the June timeframe. And I'll probably play them through the end of the year, as long as I'm seeing some success with it. And I think I'm doing my the plan is one GT a month until LVO or through LVO. And then depending on how that goes, we'll see. I still have still holding out hope that I can work with the lawyer at my work to come up with a solution to let me go to Worlds. I'd still love to go to Worlds. After that, I outside of Worlds, I see myself slowing down on the competitive end, moving forward. I think I'm going to start taking even goofier lists that look really pretty and just going again for that, have a good time, and we'll see what happens when I finally get a tournament that I go 2-3 at. We'll see if that changes the tune at all, but that's kind of the quote unquote retirement that I'm looking forward to.
Okay.
So I've got one more year going hard.
In terms of goofiness, will it be an army that takes like it's a shorter game, or you don't mind it taking it to round five and the at the 3 hour mark?
So I like to think, and I've been using a clock here and there. I haven't really ever come into a situation that I've used all the time. My games that have gone to time are usually when my opponent has gone over, and then I just keep feeding them my time because I'm not good at telling people that your time is done and the game has to be over. But I don't mind playing longer. Shorter would be good, but more at when I get to that point, I'm more focused on like what are these models that I love and running those. So like as an example, I have a list that I want to do for slaves, and it's like I think it's a Myrmidon, a unit of six Ogroids, Mega Gargant, 10 knights, and some untamed beasts. And it's not a good army, but it'll look really cool, and it'll let me run the Ogroids, which I love those models. Oh, and there's a War Shrine in there, and it lets me run those models. There is funny, goofy things that you can do, like making the Ogroids run charge and then being able to charge 3d6. So like they can book it across the board like 28 inches or something like that. And just being able to say that and have it happen once would be so funny. So
These
it'd be so
chonky,
funny.
chonky lads.
Just yeet it across the board. I don't think it's good, but it would be very fun to run, and it would. And I have a like a lot of conversion ideas on it that would make it look very cool, and that's what I want to be able to get to.
Well, we've got two little small questions here, and then we can
Yeah.
end out the show. Have you got a tip as someone that's been, or someone that's never had a negative win record? Have you got any top tips for players looking to improve their game?
I'm trying to give you think of like an honest answer here because most of it is like don't bother, and that actually genuinely might be my response is like at first don't focus on it, know that that's part of the goal, but just really get down the play style, like nail down your play style. What do you have fun doing? Because I think you're gonna do better with a list in an army that you enjoy the way it plays and it kind of fits into how you think over just this army is strong. It has a high win percentage. This is the build that people are winning tournaments with. If it doesn't mesh with you, you're not going to do as well. So you got to kind of take time to find out what you like and what works for you and build into that.
Yeah, I definitely think the people's biggest strength is something that matches their play style. Because trying to force yourself play something that you not enjoy doing, it's really hard.
Exactly. It's just more fun, man. I gonna have better time at the tournament. Like again, at the end of the day, man, none of this matters. It's fucking war dolls, right? If we say it all the time, but it's literally just plastic soldiers. You know, it's no different than when we were playing with them when we were seven.
Yep, and it's a digital scoreboard. No one
Yeah.
cares.
Brother, and take it from somebody who loves a scoreboard. It doesn't matter. Like, and I'm no good at taking my own advice, and it doesn't matter. Like, the only person that cares about it is you, and you can do it for yourself. And if that's something that you want to have, go for it and make those changes that put you in the best spot to do it. Because I'm not going to sit here and tell people what they should and shouldn't do, but you know, just keep it all in perspective.
And then last one, have you got any shout outs?
I mean, I got a shout out my team, right? My friends. So we have a club in the US. Well, it's actually an international club. It's called Tough Crowd, and it's just a bunch of guys. It's a bunch of players who really we're not built around any kind of region. We're not built around like these are the good players. We're here to have fun. And what that means is if you see somebody in a Tough Crowd shirt and a jersey, like you're going to have a good time. Like, that it's going to be a cool person. Go talk to them, hang out, get a beer, and like, you're going to have a good time if you see that person come up across the table. Like, that's the point. And that's what we want to, as a club, push is, have a good time first.
Slowly invading the internet everywhere.
We're everywhere. Yeah. we have our fingers into all of the different realms and influences.
All eight of them.
Yes. It's a conglomerate, secret conglomerate. But yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? Like, Team Warhammer's fun. And Team Warhammer in the sense of like the group of people that you go to events with, that you talk to people online with, and really push that. If you are an in it, if you're looking for something, a lot of places regionally have teams, and you can find people online. Like, just get involved with, I know a lot of the YouTube channels have Discords associated with them, and people kind of filter around through those too. Get involved and get out there. It's hard to do, but get out there.
Well, thank you so much for putting time aside and coming on the show. I've thoroughly
Thanks for
enjoyed
having me,
talking to
brother.
you.
Yeah,
It's been a
it's
great
good.
2-hour discussion.
2 hours. Damn.
Yeah, it's been good. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your Friday night and your weekend coming up.
Thanks. You too, brother.
Will do. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter at @u_wargamer, and I will see you next week.